Welcome to the Rise and Shout podcast. I am your host, Adam Mangum. In this 103rd episode, Matt and I talk about the Hoopsters, the Cougar Hoopsters, and their chances, or maybe we don't like their chances, in the NIT. We also talk about Ziggy Ansah and his continually rising draft stock. We also talk a little bit about football scheduling, some of the excitement building around the 2013 season, and we also dive into James Bond movies, including a deep, dark revelation by Matt that shocks us all. Once again, this is the Rise and Shout podcast. You can catch us at vanquishthefoe.com. You can download us on iTunes, and of course, you're going to listen to all of this awesomeness right now. The Rise and Shout podcast, a later in the week version due to us riding water slides, Matt.
We were on a little bit of the vacay.
Yes, in the same location.
It's pretty awesome.
The Wisconsin Dells. It's, I don't know, can you compare the Wisconsin Dells to anything else?
I don't know. All I have to say is I spent spring break in Wisconsin.
And it was not warm.
No, but I wouldn't have known.
No, because we really didn't go outside, pretty much.
Very rarely.
Very rarely. And when we did, it was briefly to go stuff our faces with pizza and root beer.
Which was delicious.
It was delicious, absolutely. So, Matt, this podcast is completely going to be dedicated to the World Baseball Classic.
Great, in honor of one Zach Bloxham.
In the honor of one Zach Bloxham.
Why do I give him such a hard time about the fact that he's not really into baseball? I know a lot of people that aren't really into baseball, but I really like to harass him. I don't know why.
I don't understand it either, because he actually, I think, was a baseball fan. I don't think he despises baseball.
He gives us a hard time for talking about it.
Not like you despise Riley Nelson.
That's true, but my what's the word I'm looking for here for
disdain?
Disdain? My disdain for Riley Nelson runs deep.
It has for years until you loved him, and then
There was a brief time where I was on the Riley Nelson bandwagon.
Yes,
I got on it.
The line between love and hate is very, very thin.
Yes.
I don't know what that means.
Which is
Do you know what that means?
I don't know what that means, but that line's very thin, just like the line between too injured to play and starting quarterback.
Yes, also very true.
But that part's not his fault.
So on this podcast, we're going to talk about a lot of things, but before we do that, for coverage of the BYU Hoopsters, if they do indeed make the NIT, make sure you check that out on vanquishthefoe.com. All eight of you that are still interested in BYU basketball. Also, you can tweet at us, the podcast, at BYU_RiseShout. You can email us, adam@loyalcougars.com and matt@loyalcougars.com, if you have any questions or comments or anything that cannot fit in 130 characters, or if you live in a cave somewhere, but somehow have email but not social media. So there you go.
There you have it.
There you have it. So, Matt, the NIT... I have a story about the NIT. Can we go back in time?
Is this from when you competed in the NIT?
Well, there's no chance that I competed in the NIT.
So we're going back in actual time, not back in time to like some alternate reality.
No.
Like Back to the Future 2 where he gets the almanac. It's not that type of situation.
No, though that would be fun. That would be more fun than this story is going to be.
Oh, well, I'm sorry to have ruined it before it even got started.
What was I saying? So, back in the year 2000, we were in the NIT. Is this the last time we were in the NIT? I'm having a hard time getting some, like, Cougar Stats doesn't have basketball on it anymore.
I think everybody's just kind of decided to pretend like it's not there.
To pretend that BYU basketball doesn't exist.
Let's just take a break. I think that's kind of how everybody feels.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Let's see.
I can understand. So, 2000, they were in the NIT, lost in the... It doesn't have it here.
Lost in the second round of the NIT. Anyway, I'll look this up in a second. The point, I'm trying to make a really lame point about this, which is that this is the first time I met my wife. Outside of the Marriott Center in a parking lot. We were supposed to go on a blind date several days later, and I ran into her roommate, and we chatted.
So there you go. This is the 99 to 2000 season with Steve Cleveland as coach?
Correct, correct. Yes. It was our third game we lost to Notre Dame. I actually met my wife on Wednesday, March 15th, after that opening game. I was actually there covering – this is going to sound much more impressive than it is. I was covering the Bowling Green game for the Associated Press.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah, yeah, I was.
A little humble brag there.
Not really a humble brag because I don't do humble, and not really a brag because basically they couldn't get anyone else to do it.
They're like, oh, that guy has a pulse. Does he know how to write English?
A little. Okay, we're good. Has he seen a basketball game before? Yes. Okay.
Just to fill you in on the history of BYU and the NIT.
Yes.
BYU did appear that season in the NIT. Were eliminated in the quarterfinals.
Yes, they were.
They returned to the NIT tournament in the 2001-02 season.
Yes, they did.
Were eliminated. Illuminated?
I don't think that's true.
I think I'm going to say eliminated in the second round. And their last appearance to the NIT was in the 2005-06 season where they lost in the first round.
So recently the NIT has not been that good to them. And truthfully, that 99-2000 season was bogus because that Notre Dame game should have been in Provo. We were the better team that year, and we should have gotten that game, and they host us. The NIT did. But anyway, Matt, the BYU team, the Cougars may or may not be in the NIT this year. There are most prognosticators have them in as a fourth or a fifth seed. Okay, that can be on the bubble because everyone who won their regular season championship, who doesn't get into the NCAA, so if they lost in the conference championship, is guaranteed a spot. So we'll see, and it's announced Sunday night. But assuming they get in, how good do you feel about their chances to make a run in the NIT?
Not very.
Why?
I think that all of the air has been let out of this balloon. I think this, you look at this last, you know, their final stretch, what was it, 7-7?
3-5, but 7-7 probably. So, if you go back 14 games.
Okay, so say you look at 3-5. 3-5 is not good. And the way that they managed to lose some of these games, I think
7-7. 7-7 in their last 14.
I think the steam is out.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they get the bid, I think that's great. And I hope that they can kind of, you know, I don't know what the word I'm looking for, revamp things and make a run. But like I said, going into the conference tournament, I haven't seen anything from this team this season that indicates that that's a likely possibility.
Since you frame up a very good time frame. The last 14 games started with the loss at home against St. Mary's on the Dellavedova heartbreak.
The dagger.
The
dagger. As it is now being called.
The dagger. And I don't buy into this like that, like it mentally hurt them. You know, I'm sure it drained them or whatever, but they came back the next game and absolutely dismantled San Diego. Okay, so a team that would beat them in the conference tournament. But something happened down the stretch where they started to play not as well as they had played even in that first St. Mary's game. Because they did not play as well in the second St. Mary's game. They got destroyed by Gonzaga once, and then at home did okay, actually. And that's the game that gave me a little hope going into the conference tournament. And then, of course, that disappointing loss to San Diego. I'm with you. I don't really see a big run. But that being said, don't teams do this where they have a bad stretch and then get into a tournament of some kind and then sometimes go on a run? I mean, it's possible. It just doesn't feel very likely.
And some of it might come down to matchups. I mean, who do they get in the first round? Who do they get if they win that? Who do they get in the second round? And what kind of team is it? And you know, and does Hoss get hot? Yes. Does he not have the flu?
Yes, that would be an improvement.
Which obviously was hurt in the conference tournament or whatever.
Is Carlino not terrible?
Right. You know, we're talking about Carlino with hair, Carlino without hair. So I think there's a lot of factors to it, but I don't see them making a deep run in any tournament right now.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's not good. It's not good. And quite frankly, sometimes I wonder, especially in that game of San Diego, the announcer kept saying it, why does Davies not touch the ball every time down the court on offense? Unless it's a fast break. If they're not doubling, if they're not preventing the pass into the post, don't you feed him every time?
Yes.
It just baffles me sometimes when I see, and the only other option when they're both on the floor should be Haas coming off screens or creating his own shot. Every time I see Nate Austin do that fadeaway jump shot, I want to poke myself in the eye with a sharp stick.
That fadeaway jump shot reminds me a lot of how I used to play basketball in junior high.
It does. And actually, that does look a lot like you.
I was big on the fadeaway. I did the fadeaway turnaround, and I bricked it all the time. And I have flashbacks. I have flashbacks when I watch him.
Yes.
But that was kind of my signature move.
That was your signature move, and your career did end in junior high.
It did. Actually, I did play. I was technically on the roster of my freshman basketball team in high school. I was on the roster. I played very little.
I didn't even know this. This is a new fact.
Okay, this is a great story. Oh, here we go. Here's a really good story.
Is this as good as my story about meeting my wife?
No. This is lamer. So, freshman year in high school.
Good, let's keep it going.
And I'm sure the listeners really want to hear about my high school sports.
Oh, absolutely they do. Bring it on.
So, freshman year in high school, I had been trained as a big man. As you remember, I grew early and then stopped. So in junior high on my traveling team, I was a center. But by the time we got to high school, everybody was taller than me. And
you are not a tall man. Nothing
and I
personal.
Could not, and I can't shoot.
Also true.
So I ride the pine.
Or dribble.
No, not very good at dribbling, not great at passing. I was very good at boxing out people that were 3 inches, 4 inches shorter than me, or knocking them down in order to get the ball. That was kind of my –
You were very good at that.
So
and picking fights with bigger players. I remember that in junior high.
Yes. That was also a little bit of a trademark, I guess. Anyway, so the point was freshman year, I sit the bench the whole season. Spring of my freshman year, I'm on the track team because that's what the football coaches want me to do. They want me to run track. So we're at a practice meet before the track season even starts. I didn't even know you have scrimmage track meets. I don't even understand what that means. But that's what we were doing. And we had ridden the bus with the JV girls softball team. Okay?
That in and of itself is a bad idea.
The coach for the JV girls softball team was the same coach who had coached my freshman basketball team.
Yes, that makes Oz.
His name was Oz. So the last event of the meet, they need somebody to run a leg in the 4x400. And everybody other than me has already run two events because a bunch of people didn't come to this thing.
What does this have to do with basketball?
I'm getting to my point.
Oh.
So I run a leg in the 4x400. We won't get into the time. We'll just say I ended up making the 4x400 team and ran it the rest of the year, actually. But I got on the bus because the softball team had finished their game before us, and they had all watched this race. I got on the bus, and the freshman basketball coach says to me, "Mangum, why didn't you ever run that fast on the basketball court?" I said, "Coach, you never put me on the floor to run that fast."
Well, that actually was that was a pretty lame story. You're right. That was lamer than my story.
Yeah, you might want to edit that.
No, I think I'm going to leave it in. So Matt, we're not very hopeful about their chances. Okay.
No, I'm about as hopeful as my chances ever playing on a competitive basketball team.
Yes. So we're not very hopeful. Quite frankly, it really comes down to, in a lot of ways, can Haas and Davies carry them, and can you get a hot shooting night from the likes of Cusick, Carlino, or even Zylstra, right? To complement something like that. Like you said, it could be matchups. If there's somebody that Davies can drop like 30, 10, and 5 on, then maybe that makes all the difference. If we get matched up against a team that's deep in the paint defensively, I think we might be in trouble. Or against an elite point guard, because, man, we struggle against some of the better point guards. So let's move on.
Basically, if they have a good player at any of the five positions, we're in trouble. That's essentially what you just said.
Well, we struggle defensively. I'll put it that way. We do struggle defensively. I would say that's a fair thing to say, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
So we've got a couple of basketball-related tweet bag questions.
Tweet bag.
The first one is, I'll get from Jared Cowley, that's both basketball and football. Do you find it more difficult to care about BYU when they're struggling as they did in football and basketball this year? That's at Jared Cowley. Matt, I'll toss that to you first.
Absolutely, and more so in basketball than in football for me. I'll watch a high school football game if it's on TV. I will watch football. But when the basketball team is struggling, or when they just aren't, I'll even take a team that's struggling but is still fun to watch. I don't know how that works, but I'd imagine that's got to exist somewhere. But yeah, I think it's harder for everybody. I think when you look at some of the conversations and the boards and places where people go, the conversations really stray away from the actual sport when the team struggles. So I think that's a universal issue.
Yeah, it's a universal issue. I mean, quite frankly, we see our downloads for this podcast go down.
Yeah, I mean, and I just told a story from high school, my freshman year in high school, instead of talking about the basketball team.
Yeah, I find it harder. I'm the same way with football. I'll watch BYU even if they were 1-10. I'd watch all the games. I'd watch them all. Mm-hmm. Would I prioritize it the same way with other things going on as I would if they were undefeated going into their last game? Of course not. I mean, right? But
yeah, you DVR that and watch it later.
Right. Yes. But that being said, quite frankly, because BYU TV, I stayed more engaged in this basketball season than I would have otherwise.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's just easier to watch the games. And quite frankly, the same will be for football to me, the football season struggles weren't as bad as people put them out to be, just because unlike – it seems like most football fans, or at least most football fans on Twitter, I actually like defensive football. I don't hate games that end 6-3. I actually sometimes hate games that end 51-47 because it meant both the defenses were terrible, and so half the game was played poorly, right? Right. So watching that defense – I have a lot of good memories of watching that defense. It would have been worse for me to watch it, and that schedule was fairly difficult, and we lost, in most cases, to pretty good teams. So it would be very different. I've got a much different feel in my mouth for this basketball season after it ends with a loss to San Diego. Instead of, had we beat San Diego and then got beaten by a better team, St. Mary's, in the semis.
And I think that almost would have been that last situation you talked about. So you beat San Diego and you lose to St. Mary's. I think that changes the way people would look at this season pretty dramatically.
Sure.
But going out, I mean, it just feels like they just limped out of this season, and which is really unfortunate. But that to go out at that point in the tournament against that caliber of a team, I think is really what will stick in the memories of BYU fans from this season. Those who stuck it out and kept watching the games into the tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, another Twitter question that's loosely basketball-based but also football-based is from Justin Sweeney. That's at Justin D. Sweeney. He asks, what will Bronco do to Coach Rose if Bronson tears up his ankle or knee playing a meaningless NIT game?
Bronson did return to practice this week.
Here's the thing. All the games, the basketball games, are meaningless to Bronco, right?
Right.
Even if they were in a first round tournament game, I'm not sure to Bronco that would make any difference whatsoever. The national championship game, or Final Four game, or Sweet 16, maybe then he's like, yeah. I mean, that's a big deal. But had we barely made the tournament and we were playing some farly superior team in the first round, I don't think Bronco goes, oh, well, I'm okay if he blows out his knee in that game. You know, just not some NIT game. You know what I mean? Like, I don't. I think Bronco would just prefer not to play at all.
Well, and I don't know that Dave Rose isn't the person who should be fearing Bronco Mendenhall. Bronson Cafusi should be fearing Bronco Mendenhall if he tears up his knee playing in a basketball game.
But he gave us one of the highlights of the entire season, didn't he? Did he not?
Yeah, but, you know, if one of the highlights of the entire season is the time your football player turned basketball player lays a ridiculously hard foul on an opponent, like, that's a sign, everybody.
It's a sign of awesomeness.
That's like the year that Matt Payne had the hit of the year in Cougar Stadium when they voted at the end of the season at the last game on the Jumbotron.
Yeah.
And his hit on a return was the hit of the year.
It was a nice hit, though.
It was a sweet hit. It was a nasty hit. It was a hit that a kicker the size of a linebacker lays on somebody. Yeah. It was a great hit.
Yeah.
But that should never be the hit of the season. And a hard foul on Kelly Olynyk should never be the highlight of the year.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. It shouldn't be. And actually,
it probably might be.
It probably isn't the highlight of the year, really.
I think it's Cusick's shot.
Yeah, I think it's Cusick's shot. I'm with you. That's probably the shot of the year. Well, we'll get back to the basketball team whenever their season does finally conclude to do awards and all of our stuff. With that. So we're going to switch over to football, Matt. First thing up, Ezekiel Ansah, also known as Ziggy. We talked about him last time, and we talked about his great time in the NFL Combine. He has moved up draft boards. When we started talking about the draft, he was in the late teens, mid-teens, early 20s, depending on what expert you asked. They all now have him like in the top 5, 6, 7 picks. He has shut up. He has shot up the list, and several draft pundits, is that the right word? Prognosticators, they have him going to the Detroit Lions at number 5, which I think is unfortunate because the Lions are going to be terrible. But he will get to play next to Sue. How do you say? I never can say his first name right. Often suspended Sue. How's that?
There you go. Ndamukong.
Ndamukong. Is that really how you say it?
I'm not sure. I think it's Ndamukong.
It probably is. I don't know. I'm terrible at pronouncing names.
But that is a nasty defensive line.
Well, very talented group, and they lost some players, so they need depth there. And quite frankly, in some ways, it's who cares? All the teams that are drafting in that first group are not very good and likely will not be very good next year. So no matter if he does slip into that group, I was really hoping he'd end up with a team like the Buccaneers or farther down the list, the Saints, where some people had him pegged before, because then he was on a team that could turn around and get in the playoffs and he could be, part of that. But
I'll tell you what, though, what this makes me think of is the line from Princess Bride where Andre the Giant says, "It's not my fault I'm the biggest and the strongest. I don't even exercise."
Yes.
You know, Ziggy, he shows up at the combine. He didn't even work with an outside trainer. He's like, "Oh, yeah, I'll just show up. They've got some drills. Yeah, I'll just look at it that morning. No big deal."
And people say he's had higher 40 times than a 4.65, which for a guy
4.56.
4.56, which a guy for his size is like, but they claim he's done better on campus, which I don't know if that's true or not. But I mean, 4.56 is ridiculous for a guy that size. I mean, it's ridiculous. But it will be interesting at this point. Will this stop the Bronco can't develop players for the draft garbage, or do you think that continues because people will justify and say, well, he didn't even really recruit this guy. He's just a freak.
I think
or does Ogletree have to get drafted? Why can't I think of the lineman's name? Brown. Isn't it Brown?
You're talking about...
Who am I thinking of?
Now you got me confused. Hanson?
Hanson. Brown, Hanson. Strong Mormon names. Do they have to get drafted in order to get some of those people who... have been on his case for not developing NFL players?
I think the people who like to get on his case for not developing NFL talent will rationalize away Ziggy Ansah as a fluke, a freak of nature, or whatever you want to call him. I think in order to really answer the critics on that one, Broncos got to send a couple of guys to the league in the draft every year for a few years. And theoretically at different positions. But, you
well,
know,
next
the
year,
program...
Next year they're going to have two guys in the draft again.
That's right.
With Vannoy and Hoffman, and who knows if somebody else develops to the point where they're draft worthy. So this will be, regardless of the outcome of this draft, it'll be 2 years in a row where they put guys in the draft. The streak is done and will not start again next year, barring Hoffman and Vannoy having, you know, career-ending injuries. Oh, gosh, I can't believe I just said that.
Yeah, why would you even say that?
I just threw up in my mouth.
They're being really careful with these guys in practice.
Of course they are.
I mean, it's just like, you know
Hoffman,
what?
What does Hoffman have to prove?
No. He's not doing anything, right? But even Vannoy is taking very limited reps.
Yeah. So that's, we think they can get past that. Well, let's move off of Ansah. There'll be more news to come as we get closer to the draft.
And into his NFL career.
That's right. Justin Sweeney has a couple of other questions for us, one of which I will save to the end. He says, does 90 play speed plus recovered Hill plus Hines emergence, and I'm not buying Hines emergence, by the way, yet, okay? We heard this story before. Jamal Williams.
Hine,
yeah. Is it Hine?
I believe it is pronounced Hine, but you're not buying it either way.
I'm not buying it no matter how you pronounce his name. Not yet. In spring, all of our running backs always look terrific. Last year it was like, oh, man, we're coming in strong. Jamal Williams probably won't even play next year because of the depth at running back.
I'll tell you what, he's the real deal.
He is the real deal. He said, okay, so plus Hine, plus Jamal Williams, plus Hoffman, plus Elisa make everyone else drool. Yes?
I'm drooling, but I'm drooling without Elisa or Hine.
Elisa's good.
He's good.
He's good. He's power back.
He's no Jamal.
Well, he's no Jamal, but we need depth. Jamal Williams isn't going to carry the ball 40 times a game.
Maybe he should.
No, he shouldn't. you know, Elisa is depth. And if I'm wrong about Hine and he can be what a lot of people believe he can be, then if you have three running backs who all are above average, and Jamal, I think, is well above average, but if you have three elite running backs, well, I shouldn't say elite, above average running backs, it's a huge boost to your offense. Because last year, my criticism of, oh, look, who want to pick your random running back who just came in, there goes 80% of the playbook, and yep. The defense knows it. If you've got three guys that can come in and basically you can run any play with them, then the defense has to – it just changes the way the defense plays and opens things up for the quarterback and the other players on the offense. So I'm pretty excited about that. Related question, it seems both, and this is from Corey Hickman at Cougarback, it seems both Utah and BYU are installing up-tempo Oregon-style offenses. How will this impact the rivalry game in September? Matt?
There's going to be a lot of plays.
There will definitely be a lot of plays.
I'm not sure I'm ready to get into rivalry talk quite yet. But I think it's really going to come down to, you know, if both teams are putting in that type of offense, which of the two is able to execute it better? And then defensively, who can slow the other team's version of that type of offense down?
See, I'm not so worried about the number of plays. That's a way to change up the game, right? We had 79 offensive snaps against Utah last year. Okay? We averaged less than 4 yards per offensive play. That, to me, is what needs to change. If one of the ways we get there is by upping the tempo and getting towards 90 plays a game on offense, great. I'm all for that. It's entertaining if you're good at it. But to me, it's more about can we increase the yards per play? Forget about the number of plays. Because you can win in a lot of different ways. The Oregon style of offense is not the only way to win. We just need a more effective offense than what we've had the past three seasons, period, no matter how you do it.
Yes.
But it would make that game very different than it has been in the recent past, you know, where, you know, you've not had – let's just call it, they haven't been offensive juggernaut games recently. You know, Utah did have that 54-point explosion against us a couple of seasons ago. But, you know, 17-16 in 2010, 26-23 in 2009 – we'll forget that 2008 ever happened.
Did they play that year?
And let's not talk about 2003. I watched that game in a Buffalo Wild Wings, and let me tell you, I was trying to hit every button you could to make that game change or something. But apparently, the guy in the stadium had fallen asleep. That game was terrible. 3-0 Ugh. I know people think 2012 was a rough season. Can they go back and watch 2003? You know what I mean? Like, and it's the same thing with the basketball team when people are like, this is the worst season ever. Are you kidding me? Like, the worst season ever? No.
No, I think 96-97 is up there for basketball, worst season ever.
Up there? It's not up there. It is. They were 1-25. And Cleveland, and not that long ago, Cleveland's last season, they were 9-21. That's not that long ago. That was 2004-05. You know what I mean? Is this Rose's worst season? Maybe. I mean, the 2005-2006 season was maybe a little better. I don't think it was better. I think this team was better. But anyway, I don't know. All right. So we did not get to talk about scheduling last time, Matt, and some scheduling news has come out.
Yes.
So we're going to play Virginia, like, through 2057, I think. which, of course, the extended thing on Virginia then led to a flurry of tweets saying, are we going to be invited to join the ACC?
Oh, come on.
Did you see those? Oh, it was crazy. It was like, oh, my gosh, we scheduled a couple of other games with Virginia, we must be going to the ACC. And I'm like, why are those things
related? Why would you schedule games with the Virginia if you're going to the conference? That doesn't even make any sense. The connection between those two things doesn't even make any sense.
Stop it. That's ridiculous. It makes lots of sense. Okay?
That's just a weird conspiracy theory to develop off of this announcement.
Yes, I agree. It is a weird conspiracy theory. But anyway, so why aren't people, like, freaking out about this announcement with UConn? Or with when we announced the games with Michigan? Going to the Big Ten!
Going to the Big Ten.
And
Notre Dame's coming with us.
Notre Dame's
we're scheduling coming. Them, too. So we must all just be putting together our conference schedules.
So tell me, what do you think about there seemed to be a lot of wah-wah about the UConn announcement. Like, big deal. I thought it was cool. I mean, this isn't one of your premier games. It's not, it's not scheduling Michigan or Texas or even Boise State. But I thought it was cool, a game in Hartford.
Oh, yeah, you know? It's cool. It's not all your games, and you don't want all your games to be Texas and Michigan.
Yes, you do. All of them. They have to be.
And a lot of this, and I know a lot of this comes down to geography, I think, with the program's goals of access and exposure, I think playing in all regions of the country has a value on it. And so you get a game up in the Northeast, then you get a game a little further down the Atlantic coast. You know, the only thing about the Virginia announcement I don't like is that on the BYU website, they have a picture of the last time we played in Charlottesville, and we're wearing those uniforms with the tan stripe. No, it's after the bibs.
Oh.
But the tan stripe is still on the helmet.
Anyway,
it's the only thing about that announcement I don't like. But that's really what they're trying to do here. They're trying to cover geography.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And that's what these two games give them.
And I think they're also announcing they're joining the ACC.
Or the American 12 Conference.
Or the American 12 Conference.
Or whatever they're going to be called since their basketball team stole their conference name.
No, that's the Big East.
Oh, right. Sorry.
That's not the ACC. You're getting your conferences.
I was thinking UConn. I'm talking UConn.
Oh, you're talking UConn. Yes. Whatever they're going to be called. The Metro Conference, I've heard they might be called.
Yeah. The Leftover Conference.
The Leftover Conference.
The Leftover 12.
The non-Catholic 12. I don't know.
The football schools.
The football
formerly
schools.
Known as the Big East.
Yeah. We'll see how that works out. So that's kind of exciting.
I think their new conference name is just going to be a symbol.
Yes.
And they'll be referred to as the conference formerly known as the
Big East. I like it. All right, Matt. Well, we've got two. We're going to go out on two more tweet bag questions. Did we cover everything we were supposed to cover?
I would not know.
Look at, I sent you an agenda. How can you not?
I just follow your lead.
Okay, so we've got Drew Troutner. That's
really?
At Drewski5 on Twitter. He sends us awesome questions.
Yes, indeed.
He does. He sends us awesome questions. And I don't even know the answer to this, so I'm embarrassed that we're brothers and I don't know the answer. This is a question I should know, but here we go. He asks us, he says he just watched all 23 Bond movies in the last few weeks, which is awesome. And my question is he married and does he have children? Because I could never pull that off. I would love to watch 23 Bond movies in a couple of weeks, but I could never pull that off and have a job. All of those things. If somebody laid me off, I'd do it. I'm not requesting to be laid off. So he watched all 23 Bond movies in the last few weeks. Who's your favorite Bond and which is the best movie? Matt, are you prepared to answer this question or should I go first?
Why don't I go first? Because my answer is going to shock and surprise you.
Okay. You've never seen a Bond movie.
Not really into the Bond stuff.
Oh, you're killing me!
Not really
killing
feeling
me, Smalls.
I saw one. It was the one where there was the guy with the diamonds in his face.
Yes.
And there
yes.
was a scene, I think, in the beginning where they were in a like an ice castle.
It's towards the end, actually, the scene with the ice.
Oh. Well, anyway, that's the one I saw. I don't even know what it's called.
It's Die Another Day.
Die Another Day.
Yeah.
So that's the one I saw. So if I'm going to select my favorite, I guess that's it.
That's terrible.
That's why I went first, because that'd be really anticlimactic to do that one last, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would be anticlimactic.
I know, I've let you down.
You did let me down. You like spy movies?
I know,
you
I
like
love spy
the Bourne movies.
Love the Bourne movies.
Oh, absolutely, you need to see Skyfall. Skyfall is terrific.
And I've got a good friend who's told me I need to go see Skyfall. But
oh,
you know what I think gets me on the Bond movies?
What?
I'm 23 movies behind. How do you catch up
it
on that?
It doesn't matter. They're all independent. There's very little connection between the movies.
So let me throw that out there. I want him to tell me, or you can chime in too, but I want you guys, let me know which one I need to go start with, and maybe I'll go rent one.
Whoa, what one you should start with? That's an excellent question, and Drew is obviously a bigger Bond fan than I am.
Just saw them all, so he's the specialist.
So he's the specialist. He's the one to tell you. I would say that you can really, Goldfinger's the one I would start with, which is 1964. It is Sean Connery as Bond. Goldfinger is what I would start with. But Casino Royale, if you don't want to go all the way back in time, and then Skyfall is not a bad way to go. And then you could go back and watch some of the others. So I'm gonna say what, and then I'll talk about what Drew also responded. I was curious what his favorites were and who his favorite Bond was. I'm a Sean Connery guy. That's when I got into the series, was watching some of them, not back in 1960s. I'm not that old. But our dad is a Bond fan, which you may or may not know.
Was not aware of this.
Yes, I've seen most Bond movies with dad. Most of the Bond movies. I have not seen all 23. I think I counted before this podcast started. I think I've seen 21 of them. I was spared Moonraker, which many people consider the worst Bond movie of them all. And I was spared that one. But my favorite is probably Skyfall, and that might be like recency bias, but man, it was really good. With Goldfinger, which is only the third Bond movie, being pretty awesome. Now think about this for a second. They released two Bond movies in 1 year.
Wow.
From Russia with Love and Goldfinger came out the same year, April and then December. And then so within like 3 years, they released four Bond movies. It was awesome, I'm sure, if I had been alive. But I wasn't. He's my favorite Bond by leaps and bounds, probably.
By leaps and bounds.
But I will tell you that Pierce Brosnan's probably my least favorite. A couple of those movies were good, but it was probably my least favorite. GoldenEye was pretty awesome. You've played the GoldenEye video game. You've played Bond.
Does that count? Does it count as seeing the movie?
No. Doesn't count as seeing the movie, but
the fact that I know that Pierce Brosnan was in that show Remington Steele, does that count?
No, none of these things are important. That hurts, actually, I think. Drew says his top in no order is Goldfinger, Dr. No, which is also very good. Skyfall, GoldenEye, You Only Live Twice. I don't remember You Only Live Twice. I haven't seen that one in a long time. And as I said before, I would definitely recommend Skyfall. You don't have to have seen any movies. It's not like the Bourne movies where they're building on each other. The characters are, you know, yeah, I mean, there's probably some inside jokes you don't get, but the action and the plot, you'd be fine. But I will wait for Drew, and I wonder what he says about where you should enter the franchise.
I'm excited to find out. And I'll tell you, if he gives me where the entry point is, I will go watch that one.
I'm guessing he's going to say GoldenEye, but I may be mistaken because he may do that. And I have flirted with the thought of buying the whole 23 movie set.
Apparently Drew has done more than flirted with it.
Yes, he has.
He's gone all the way.
I've thought, is that appropriate for this podcast?
It is now. I just said it.
That's true. And I don't do much editing anymore. So, Matt, one last tweet bag question, and we'll get out on this one. And this is from our friend Justin Sweeney, his third entry into this podcast today. I'm coaching my soon-to-be 5-year-old's Little League team. Any baseball tips for a basketball guy? And one of his hashtags is girls sport. He does have a smiley face afterwards, but I don't understand why people think you can insult something like that and then say... And then say smiley face, and that makes it okay. It's like putting your hazard lights on in a no parking zone. It doesn't make it okay. Oh, he got his hazard lights on. He can park there now.
Yeah.
It doesn't make it okay. First thing that I have a problem with the girls' sport thing is baseball's awesome. And second thing is I'm the father of 3 girls, and girls are awesome. All right.
Wow, so Sweeney's just striking out with this tweet bag question.
Yeah, that's right, he is. I coached my daughter's t-ball team last year, and my suggestion, and she was just barely, she was 5, turning 6. My suggestion is wear a cup. That's my top suggestion. There are little uncoordinated children with metal bats in their hand right at the right level. So I would wear a cup. And my second suggestion, Justin, is patience, because these kids will have absolutely no idea what they're doing. We had girls run to the wrong bases. We had girls have balls luckily not hit them in the head because they were not paying attention, including my own daughter, who I nicknamed Ballerina in the infield, who would just be doing pirouettes and other dance moves in the middle of the game just for fun. Any advice from you on coaching the Little League team?
A couple years ago, I coached my son's 6-year-old Coach Pitch Little League baseball team.
Coach Pitch.
And a couple of things I want to just throw out there. One is if you're the pitcher, don't be afraid to pull yourself out of the game if you've hit 2 batters in a row. Okay? It's bad enough. Like, if you're being your own kid, like, that's one thing, right? But when you're being in other people's kids and they're in the stands, like,
well, man, you didn't have to rear back and throw like 75 miles an hour. That was over the top.
Listen, he was hanging over the plate. He needed to back up. But the other serious advice I would give him is this. Enlist as many parents as possible, that the ones that come to practices and seem to kind of be into it, enlist their help. Break the kids up into small groups and run drills with them.
Yes.
On practice so they learn how to throw, get proper mechanics and all this. The other thing is run those drills before the game. You're going to scare the crap out of the other team's coaches.
And wear a cup. I got racked, I think, 3 times last year. So I would also build in fun stuff, like I used to race them around the bases.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that stuff's, I mean, if you're not thinking of that stuff, Sweeney, I mean, you're way out
stuff.
In the field if you're not doing that stuff.
That's right, that's right. Because quite frankly, as I watch some of the other teams, I mean, some of these guys take it way too seriously. Like, this is T-ball, girls softball, and this will be your little boys, you know, softball or T-ball or coach pitch, whichever it is. Just, you know, do not take it seriously. And set up, the other thing is, set up expectations with all parents beforehand that we are not taking this seriously.
It should be about having fun and teaching the kids the game.
The fundamentals of the game, absolutely.
That's all that matters at that level. That's all that matters.
And it's not a girls' sport. And even if it was, that's fine. All right, Sweeney? I'm looking at you. Technically, I'm looking right at your avatar picture right now as I say this. And he's got, like, a bunch of law books behind him or something.
Well, that's where he's been, isn't it? It wasn't. He didn't send us any questions for a while because he was studying for some law test.
I don't know. He is law offices of Justin D. Sweeney. Does he have his own law offices?
I don't know.
Is he advertising for his law office?
He's really busy. That's all I know.
He's got fancy books behind him in the picture.
My apartment is full of leather-bound books. And
smells of rich mahogany. All right. Well, that's the podcast, boys and girls.
There you have it.
Thanks for listening. It's been awesome. Next week we'll be back with hopefully a guest. for those of you going, oh gosh, just the two of them for like 45 minutes. And hopefully a guest, and then we will hopefully be talking NIT and some more spring football. And we will, of course, catch you next time.
Go Cougars.